I don't want to say, I do want to say that the intensity of my response to what I saw when I saw those photographs certainly had roots in my own experience. I don't want to say two things. I don't want to say that my experience is of a scale of those photographs. It wasn't.
No, I know.
But I do want to say that had I not found that other people my age had horrors of other kinds, I would have thought it was just my problem. And the other thing I want to say is scars or physical accidents are metaphors. I mean, they are things that just push you ahead. They're not different in kind from what everybody else experiences. What I experienced from having a horrible scar and then a lot of plastic surgery and being a kid in the hospital a lot and all of that, which is really hard, was I began to learn that there are visible scars and there are invisible scars, but everybody has scars. And it's almost an advantage to have your scars in public.
Well, now we raise the big question. This is World War II, the girl, the child, yourself. You went through a certain personal, I use the word Holocaust, like small h, where that does, this is Big Bill's question. Bill, do we have to go through?
Yes, I think so, yes.
You think what?
I think that none of us wants to learn the things that are hard and the things that are important, none of us wants to learn because they're hard. And so we only learn them as we get our noses rubbed in them. And we all know that. I live in a neighborhood of second families.
What?
I live in a neighborhood of second families.
What are second families?
I live in a neighborhood where all the parents are 40 and all the children are 3.
Mm.
You know, I live in a neighborhood of second marriages. There are infinite ways to have your nose rubbed in the fact that life is very exacting. It's demanding, but it's also exacting. And the more we know, the more we ask. There's every way in the world to have a scar.
Gotta come back to you, to Nora Gifford, this child
Nora
of 13.
Watson.
Nora Watson, I beg your pardon. Nora Watson.
The transparent
this
Nora
child
Gifford.
Who saw these photographs and identified something happened to her. But also, she was another generation. Now, that she's 4 years older than the baby boom babies. And so it come World War II. So how, it obviously affected you in these ways we've talked about.
Right.
Any other way? World War II. Because we're talking about, you're living, the bomb. Now, I never got to ask you that.
The bomb.
You see?
The bomb has stayed.
You don't know when you became aware of it,
but
though.
But Stutz, you know what I am very, very much aware of.
Now, it was 1945. It was dropped on Hiroshima.
So
you were
two
years old. You didn't know.
9 years later, I tell my aunt that I will never have children, and I have, in fact, never had children. There's more to it than that. When I came back 3 years ago from my mother's funeral to New York, my friend Mary Morgan, whom I just told you about, was so wonderful. She came in from the country, and we had dinner and putting me back together after mother died. My mother was a woman who prepared to be a missionary, and she was a fundamentalist preacher's wife. She never smoked, she never drank, she never kept late hours.
Mm-hmm.
She never did anything bad. She had no friends who were corrupt. She died of total, massive, inexhaustible cancer at age 62. Mary, the first day that I went upstairs to her apartment after I came back from that, said, "I am so angry," says Mary, not knowing anything at all about what this is going to mean to me, nor did I. She said, because there's this terrific, horrible story in the New York Times, and she pulls the New York Times out, and it's the full page on Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. It turned out that Canonsburg, Pennsylvania was in... When I was a kid, it was always said that Canonsburg was a prime bombing target for the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was because of the bridge works, which manufactured finished steel or something. Turns out, Canonsburg, Pennsylvania was a radium processing center.
Radium processing.
They didn't know diddly. When Madame Curie came to the United States, President Hoover, or whatever, gave her a whole ball of radium. into her hands, and she didn't know she was dying of radium sickness at the time. Gansburg, Pennsylvania, separated radium and put the tailings in the creek.
Put the what in the creek?
The tailings, or whatever they call it, from the radium process, went in our creek, the creek I used to fall into when I was skipping stones, stepping across the walking stones to do the shortcut to school up the back way. You know, you do across the stones and you fall in the water and you slip.
Recreate that memory.
Well, the shortcut to school was, I mean, you could go the long way by the streets, or you could go the short way, which was crawling under the railroad cars and then, or running between them, and then crossing the creek to get up to the backside of the school. And if you crossed the creek, you did it generally on stones that had been set in the creek, which were wet and had moss and stuff on them. You could slip, and sometimes the creek was high and they would be underwater, and you would fall into the water and be wet when you got to school. But it was this creek that they put all that radium garbage into. And my mother crossed that creek every day on her way to work. My mother never even had friends who smoked and died of cancer at 62.
Your mother?
My mother.
I think it had something to do with it.
Well, I'm saying that what we're talking about is a generalization of the Holocaust and of the bomb to our own lives.
You realize, Nora...
And you've gotten so drunk and mad and angry.
This is fantastic. I was going to come back. Listen to me. I want to come back to that girl and the Holocaust. We've got it.
But my nephew was born with cancer.
What do you mean your nephew was born?
My nephew Greg, the one who's been in the hospital the last 5 years, in and out.
Why
and he's always died. Almost died a bunch of times.
Why was he?
God knows why. Why was he? Was he conceived on a creek that was full of radium?
Was he in that area?
My sister grew up in that area. He was conceived technically in Florida.
Yeah.
My next sister.
And she lived in this
bore
area.
Bore a child who the doctor now thinks was born with a rare tumor. My mother died precociously with cancer, which does not run in our family. So I'm saying that what we are doing to ourselves, Studs, we can't talk about the Holocaust without talking about ourselves. We can't talk about scars without talking about ourselves. Scars are inside us. If they're outside, you're lucky because you have a name for it. But inside is how we live. And inside is that we put radium in our creeks. And we put scars in the skies, and they fall on babies.
So in this area, there is this radium, and you talked about this earlier. Explain it to me again, because that's our pro. We finished. We got so much. I mean, what I mean is it's fantastic.
It's our creek, the creek that I grew up on.
It's a creek near Canonsburg, Pennsylvania.
Runs through Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. Yeah. The main.
Now, what about that? What happened to that creek?
Chartiers Creek.
Chartiers.
Okay. It was an old French word, because that was old French and Indian territory.
Okay.
Chartiers Creek, on Chartiers Creek, at Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, was evidently, as of fall of 1978, for your research, in the New York Times, where they had this plant, which was the plant. I know where that plant was. Because
it was a nuclear plant?
It was a plant to process radium. We didn't have nuclear plants then.
A plant to process radium.
We didn't know that, but nobody in our town knew that.
We're talking when? Right?
It had to be during the war, because the neighborhood myth was that Canonsburg was, after all, a really important town, but despite the fact that it seemed to be a dead-end, old, yet another coal-mining town, because, after all, we were a bombing target for the Germans. Nobody knew why we were a bombing target for the Germans.
Why were you?
I think that's so important, because when I was a kid, civic pride was attached, and this is part of coming off of the war. Civic pride was attached to the fact that we were an important bombing target. You said you were from Canonsburg, PA, and so what? Canonsburg, PA, according to the WCTU, had four times the saturation level of saloons. You know, Canonsburg, PA was a dead end. It was nowhere, and you were headed for post-nowhere from coming from there. And so it was important that you were a bombing target. We didn't know that was a...
Was it really?
It was because of the radium plant. Now we know, 30 years later. But then, the bowling alley was by the radium plant. We didn't know it was a radium plant. And so you took all this stuff into your body. Now, there are now lots of people... You've heard about the court cases of guys who were Army, in the Army, just ordinary grunts in the Army, who were supposed to be watching the tests in Nevada. And now they're suing because all their children are born with all sorts of birth defects. Well, my nephew was born with a birth defect called a tumor on his spinal cord. And my mother, who was a young woman and never did anything that all the doctors say you're not supposed to do, died of massive cancer with no history of cancer in the family.
She lives in that area we're talking about.
She lived in our town. I mean, we grew
Cannonsburg.
Up. Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania, up the hill from the creek, two blocks. What I'm trying to say is that you take things that are concrete and make them metaphors, and then you find they're concrete again. You look at a photograph and say, this is what's concrete about the mushroom, and then you find out that it's on your creek. That there are not good guys and bad guys in the way in which we talk about good wars and bad wars. Like we're out to save the world for democracy. If we were out to save the world for democracy, we would have stopped Hitler before he got to Poland.
Of course.
You know, we're not out to save the world for democracy. We're out for a lot of complex things, including saving the world for ourselves.
No. So where does it leave you?
It leaves
me. We're near the end of what we're talking about. A certain girl born a certain time. It leaves you.
It leaves me feeling very strongly that people want to live. I sat with my mother till and through her dying, and we were alone when she died. I have not ever seen anything like the desire of a human being to live. People want to live. Sometimes we pay hideous prices to do that. And sometimes we pay prices that are wrong to do that. But people also, besides wanting to live, want to love, and sometimes they pay more to love. You know?
Yeah.
The other thing it leaves me with is that scars are inside, scars are outside, but what matters is rubbing your nose in the stuff. The stuff is very demanding.
You have to come back to that girl of a certain time. And the photographs, assuming life, Holocaust, her own experience, and the big question is, do we have to experience what others experienced in order to say this is horrible?
I think we all can know pain in our own ways. We're near the end of your side.
No, go ahead. I got lots of...
Do you really?
Yeah. I'll turn this now. Let's just go to the brown. I can't see it, but I know I got to wait a certain time. No, fine.
I will not say this very well, so I'm glad you gave me a little more time. I think probably part of the mystical doctrine of scars, and the heart of the mystical doctrine of scars, is that people whose pain is evident attract other people to express their pain, right? And I think that may be why I've had more experience than an ordinary person might have of hearing about other people's pain. What I think from all of that, from my own and from other people's, is that people who suffer, people who are in the middle of suffering, often suffer to their maximum, and the maximums don't have to be visibly equivalent. The maximum for anybody is the maximum, and it doesn't have to look the same on the outside. When we go to our maximum, we have some kind of a choice, and we either decide to be generous about it or mean. That's the choice that's almost the only thing I think that human beings have under their control. Almost everything else seems to be not under our control. Yeah. How you respond to suffering seems to be the important thing. Yeah. Which, coming back to your question, which is the most important question, suggests that we don't voluntarily learn the important things. That life in its structure, whatever that means, forces us, unless we resist with all our might and main, to learn the important things, because we need to learn them. The difficulty that we talked about a long time ago in this interview about the post-World War II thing was that it certainly for very good reason and with a great deal of saving of suffering, relieved people of the kinds of anxieties I grew up with about food. And it would have been nice to have hot water. No. But it seems as though We lost not something that had to do with food and hot water at all. And I don't want to go back to a pump in the kitchen and no hot water at all. But I think we have to find more sensitive ways or more nuanced ways or more something ways to perceive the suffering that we don't have to go back to kitchens with pumps in them to see suffering. We can walk out on the street and see suffering. And we have to know that it's ours. Because I don't think we learn the important things without suffering.
Well, that's the important. See, that's what we're talking about.
But it's the difference between having to have a mule and having to have a war. Yeah. If you have a mule and you know that it's the equivalent of a war, you've got it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a war. Yeah. I don't have to be Jewish to be burned up.
Yeah.
You know?
Or a black sharecropper to have a mule dying and suffer as a result. But as we come back to you, that 12, 13-year-old girl of a certain generation coming across those pictures. In the meantime, we had your own experience. And so perhaps your own experience played a big part in you seeing those films, those photographs.
Well, I do want you to talk to my friend Mary, because she does come from such a different circumstance.
Could I see her sometime?
I'm sure.
You know, I think we got this.
That I would...
I'm hungry
I'll give
and you're
you
hungry.
Number.
But one other thing.
Yes.
Just to leave this.